Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to Undrafted, a Dynasty Game Theory podcast brought to you by The Undroppables. I am your host, Scott Belanger, a.k.a. Jax Falcone. This is episode number 181. Let's roll. And this is definitely a home team podcast. The week after the draft, rookie drafts are firing off. I mean, it almost feels like this podcast is late. And I mean, we're recording it Wednesday night, just days after the draft has ended. But so much moves so fast in the Dynasty landscape. I was talking to Theo Greminger. I did the Dynasty Life podcast with him earlier today, actually, although I'm not sure which one will come out first, whatever. But I did it earlier today. I was talking to him and it's like, man, could we just wait a few days? You know, because like we want to get all this content out. He's having Scott Connor on and it's like we just can't get the content out fast enough for all of us to utilize to do our drafts, because the drafts are popping off, some of them Saturday night, of the draft weekend. So, hey, with all that being said, I still have the majority of my rookie drafts to come. I think many of you guys probably do it the same way, where you give it some time to breathe, maybe just a few days. This weekend's a good time to start coming up here this weekend, the weekend after the draft, whatever. But here we are. And I want to bring my partner at the Undroppables to the program with me this week. And we really just want to lay it out, man. Just lay out our thoughts. He's going to ask me stuff. I'm going to ask him things that, you know, just come up as we have this conversation about the class and how we're playing it. Chalk and I are in a startup draft. We're going to kind of bring that up as how these players fit into the landscape of fantasy football, and specifically Dynasty, and almost most specifically Superflex, of course. So without further ado, let's bring my boy on, Mr. Chalk. What's going on, buddy?
Yo, what's up, man? What's happening, man? Good to be back. Yeah, man, it's been a little bit. Yeah. Been enjoying all your guests, though, man. You've had a gauntlet of some of the elite experts and friends of the show, friends of the brand. So excited to be hanging out again. Let's dive into it. I know we've been talking back and forth before tonight. So looking forward to diving right on in.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, you mentioned the show and, you know, I did try as I may to have the show kind of make sense over the off season, you know, starting with some college football guys to introduce us to the class, getting some film guys, Matt Harmon and Matt Waldman, et cetera, you know, later in the season before the draft to familiarize ourselves even further. And I think now a lot of the data with draft capital and all the rest of it sort of comes in. And that's where you and I, you know, we want to talk about the bit of data that we put out. And, you know, for us, it's like I want to introduce the world to the UN score wide receiver model. You know, there's so much to talk about with it. I don't want to get too long-winded, but I think, you know, it's funny because I think we learned something by trying the endeavor of actually putting this thing out there, right? That exercise in and of itself taught me more than anything else could have, you know?
Yeah, 100%, right? It's the process of learning and really grinding through you know, the numbers and the metrics that we think that really count, and the analytics of the game, right? And really grinding that out and challenging each other.
Yes.
Right? Challenging the outputs of what we, you know, what Coder and Wiz and yourself, you know, and we put together, and you know, challenging, you know, throughout, right?
Yes.
And even though, you know, some of the initial results maybe weren't favorable or weren't necessarily what we wanted to see, we didn't bend and change the way we approached it at all.
No.
And I think going through that process and really diving in and really trying to understand what made these players successful, or, I mean, more importantly, I think, which is what we're trying to do is, you know, what made them unsuccessful? What made them, you know, become a bust,
yes,
so to say? You know, what were the kind of patterns or the combinations of metrics that we were seeing that led to a bust?
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit different in our approach versus, I think, most models.
Yes.
Is, yeah, we are trying to be predictive in a sense, and we are trying to, you know, rate these prospects on a scale. But what we're really looking to do is identify the players that have the most risk carrying with them.
Yes.
And for that, we want to avoid.
Yeah, dude, that's exactly so well said, man. And it's what we were. Well, and we actually learned that a little bit as we started to see the results of what we put in there, because we didn't know that that's what we were trying to do. I mean, we certainly had that as a stated goal of it, like, of course. But the model sort of did more of that than we anticipated. And as we started to look at some of the scores that were really atrocious, we're like, hey, wait a minute. There's really not any good players in there, only busts. Not only busts, but, you know, also just players that didn't get draft capital, whatever the case. But, like, there were, the busts were kind of collected together in some sort of way. And we're like, wow, this is really highlighting that. Now, it's a small sample size, only 2018 through this year. But, you know, the test was through 2018 to 2023 classes. All that being said, let me start by telling the people where they can get it. Number one, you know, we made it available to our premium patrons, you know, for free, just because, of course, thank you so much for being part of the community. But you can just buy it. You can just buy it for $20, and it'll give you all the data from 2018 through this class. It'll give you all the rankings. It'll give you, you know, the 30,000 foot view process. It's there's an introduction. The graphics are dope. It looks fucking cool. It's like, what, 40 pages of some sort, player comps, you know, various stats that we looked at, both raw and, you know, per target, per route run, things of this nature. Age at draft, I thought, was kind of an interesting one, just to sort of look at. It's not really in the model. By the way, what's not in the model? No athleticism, no size, none of that. So, long story short, go to theundroppables.com. You can buy it right there. You can have it. It's yours. So go get it. And then I'm going to tell you, you know, what it is and a little bit more about it and what we found from it. But I want to do that right after a quick break. So what an idea. While we're at break, why don't you go buy the fucking thing? All right, cool. See you in a minute.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm here with my man Chalk. And hey, look, you know, we're talking about the model. Hope you did push pause and went and bought it. But, you know, we want to talk about it. And, you know, one thing that, you know, we are not doing is we're not saying this is the greatest thing of all time. We're the smartest of all time. Uh-uh. You know, as a matter of fact, one of the things that we did and that we did on purpose was we sent a copy to some of the people with the best models that we looked at, and like J.J. Zacharyson, Scott Barrett, others, et cetera, other people that we respected, that we wanted them to look at it and be critical. And one of the best things was having, you know, some private conversations with them and opening them being so gracious to actually be critical of it, which I was loving. Because, you know, you show someone something like, oh, that's great, man. Yeah, cool. It's like, I didn't learn anything. But actually having someone who's done modeling for years and years, and JJ, who was kind enough to actually push back on it, I was like, this is awesome. You know, we really were grateful for stuff like that. And that's just what it's about, is getting better and maybe looking for some things that because we also found things that weren't, I don't know how to say, it's not troubling in the model. It's just more like, how do we say that? So one thing I want to say about that is that this model is a little bit different in that the draft capital doesn't add value. Bad draft capital just takes value. So if you were a shitty prospect and you got overdrafted, you're still a shitty prospect. So the model doesn't bring you up. So you're going to see, an example would be Ricky Pearsall. You know, Ricky Pearsall is way down in the model, really bad, but he was drafted in the first round. You know, so for Chalk and I, it's important to understand this, because he's going to chime in here in a moment, but that doesn't mean that we look at it and go, yep, Pearsall sucks, forget about him entirely. No, because we're going to use the model as it works, and then we're going to say, okay, what does that mean for the way we value him? Because he's not going to be the worst player on our board. That's ridiculous. He's a first round pick. He can't be. But how does he fall into that because of his – see what I'm saying? So we use that in that way. Yeah. I think you can expound upon that, but understanding what a model does for you, it's not a ranking system at all.
Yeah, no, 100%. So, you know, just a few thoughts to follow up on what you're saying is, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, in private, you know, getting JJ and Scott and, you know, Danny Kelly, you know, to kind of, you know, give us some critical, you know, feedback, you know, in a good way.
Yes.
But the beauty of it, I think, at the end of it all was it held water, right? So, yeah, you know, there are poking holes, you know, they're testing it, asking us some of the hardest questions. But I think ultimately, you know, a little bit bruised up, right? Because, you know, when you go and, you know, you're being tested by the greats, you know, you're all going to come out a little bruised. But I think ultimately, you know, we stood our ground, and I think, you know, we held water.
Yes.
The model kind of succeeded in terms of kind of passing those tests, you know, at least from, you know, what we'd take from it. And then, yeah, I mean, I think more importantly is a couple, you know, other things that you mentioned. It doesn't account for, you know, things like, you know, athletic scores or you know, athletic testing, RAS or any kind of spork scores. You know, it doesn't account for any tape. So those are some things that, you know, and then draft capital, right? So it can't help you. It could only hurt you. So then what does that all mean? You know, I think the question a lot of people are going to have is, okay, well, if I have this model, if I purchase this, you know, how do I use this as my rookie drafts approach? Yep. And I know, Jax, you and I have been talking about it, but, you know, I think you had some really good thoughts about how you would approach a rookie draft, you know, using the model.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think so did you, by the way, but thank you. You know, for me, it's like, again, it's, you know, just because a player is above another player doesn't mean they're better than that player or ranked ahead of that player. It just means that the model says, hey, this is a player that has a higher chance of succeeding in his bucket. And that's why we also include years 18 through 2023, so that you can look back and go, okay, if a guy scores a 65, what bucket does that put him in? And I like to group them in certain, you know, buckets as well, to sort of help myself understand what it actually means. But there's some cases like Xavier Legette and Ricky Pearsall. The model thought they should not have been drafted where they were drafted, and Troy Franklin should have been drafted much higher. Well, then how do we use that? It's got Troy Franklin at like wide receiver 3 or 4. It's not my wide receiver 3 or 4. It just means that I'm going to make him a priority target ahead of his ADP because of where he scores in the model. And, you know, so that's the way I look at it. That's how I look at it. Like,
exactly. No, I think that's a great way of putting it, right? It's using it against the ADP,
yes.
right? And starting to track these players as you're approaching these drafts, knowing that this player has a higher chance of busting or better, you know, a lower chance of busting or being more successful. And then incorporating that into the process, right? Looking at other data points, you know, including reception perception, yes, right? Some of the other things that, you know, we pound the table up for. And it's, again, it's part of a bigger process. I don't think you can go to one site or one expert or one analyst and say, hey, what's the order that I should be drafting these players in,
right,
and take that for truth and think that that's going to be your best chance of success, right? I think it's taking a mixture of these things. And yeah, there's going to be some overlap in the process when you're taking these different data points and these different kind of you know, areas that you want to look at. But I think ultimately that's the picture that you paint as a gamer, yeah, right? This is a game we play and we all play it. We all get advice and information, but ultimately, right, the pieces on the table, on the board, I mean, that's each of us playing our own cards, right? So that's the same thing in any draft, yes, especially a rookie draft. We just another data point to bring, you know, into those draft rooms.
Yeah, and I'll touch on two quick things that I thought were interesting. And one of them is about, you know, our recent draft that you and I are doing. But, you know, it's like, okay, so you mentioned the model. It's like, okay, J.J. Zacharyson, who we respect greatly, who, like, literally we seek out his criticism and thoughts. And if he wants to give praise, great. I don't know. Just give me some of your feedback based off of your history. His model, who he's great, his running back model had Braylon Allen as his running back one pre-draft. That doesn't mean he just thinks, oh, that's the way to go. See, it's, you know, and then the flip side of that is we don't criticize the model. It's like, oh, interesting. You know, where's the model missing that player? It makes sense. Okay, it doesn't really account for this or that, and that's the reason why that player is either, you know, it's like ours, you know, doesn't necessarily add points for draft capital. So you could say, oh, I see. So that's why players like that don't necessarily just get steamed up. He's more of a risky bet, even though, you know, he's a first round player. You have to understand what the model is using and historically what it says in order to understand how you're going to use it. Does that make sense? And so the perfect example is this. Chuck, you and I are in a dynasty startup right now. We start the thing with Caleb. We start the thing with Garrett Wilson and Dak. We're in the fourth round and we're on the clock. And staring us in the face are wide receivers we like. Trey McBride gets sniped in front of us. We hate it. It's tight end premium. But we've got Michael Pittman, Brandon Ayuk, Devontae Smith. Hell of a nice little tier right there. And we really like those three players. They're 25, 26, and 26 years old or something like that. So right there in their prime. And we're on the clock and we're considering between the three. And even though Roma Dunze is below Troy Franklin in the model, we didn't consider Troy Franklin. Like, what are you, crazy? You know, it's not like, that's not how that works. We fucking drafted Roma Dunze in that spot because of all the other bits of information. He's a top 10 draft pick. He's paired with Caleb Williams. Matt Harmon loves everything about his route running. You know, there are plenty of film guys who had him as wide receiver one. He's a dog. He works hard. He's a big-bodied, athletic player who was successful with other teammates on his team that were great, that also got day one, day two capital, in this case, McMillan and Polk. Like, there are so many data points outside of one thing that we would look at that would make us say he's a 21-year-old, young phenom attached to Caleb Williams, push the button, and we did. And so I think that shows, like, our thought process and what your thought process should be in all these things is don't look at any one thing and get locked in on it. Because as a matter of fact, we were not considering him for most of the clock until sort of the end, and we started to really talk it through, and that's where we ended up. And whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision, the process is what I'm highlighting here, eh?
Yeah, no, that's a great, you know, example of a use case of, like, how we use, you know, the kind of the model to make our final decision, right? I mean, we had, you know, obviously some really good choices ahead of us, and there was other considerations, right, that factored into why we chose, you know, Roma Dunze. But I think ultimately what we leaned on, especially with the, you know, against the Troy Franklin part was, I mean, just look at the ADP. Look at the situation, look at the build. I mean, just look at the rest of the profile, you know, look at all the other data points that we have, you know, including the age, you know, and the draft capital, right? So it's like we're still looking at all these things and we're making the ultimate judgment, right? Because ultimately there's no score in our opinion that's going to just be able to spit out and it just ranks everything in order.
It's too
hard to predict it that way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's going to be hard to predict it anyway, but you know, I think having your own blend, of, you know, various data points, I think that's the best way.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did take Roma Dunze or as we like to call him, Roma Doomsday. You know, for sure. Roma Doomsday is our guy. Yeah, pretty exciting stuff. We do have a nice little start to that whole thing with, you know, in a super flex with Caleb and Dak and Garrett Wilson and Doomsday all in the first four picks. So we're feeling pretty good. All right, now let's get to it. Let's talk about the class. Go get the model, have fun with it, use it as a tool. I think it's really effective. I think it does share a lot of, you know, cautionary tales as you go find all the guys you missed on in the past. Be like, oh, where did it have, you know, player X that fucking flamed out? You'll be like, model did hate him. Wow, that's crazy. So when you see that and then you see your favorite AD Mitchell in this one, don't be pissed off is all I'm going to tell you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. You know, as we look at the class, we talked about Caleb. We did go Caleb in the first round. I'd love to hear just our thoughts about Caleb, because I think Caleb's steaming up a bit, and I don't blame the community. I don't blame the market for starting to think that Caleb can get there. You know, he's the first overall pick. They did draft Roma Dunze. It's not great for Rome year one, but, you know, we'll get to Rome in a second, but it's definitely good for Caleb in year one to have, you know, those three guys, DJ Moore, who was basically supporting Justin Fields on his friggin' own, add Keenan Allen, who may or may not stay healthy, but then you bring in one of the best college route runners that we've ever seen in Roma Dunze to add to that. It's like, God dang, that's going to be a solid squad. You know, they've got some running back help. They've got depth there. This should be a pretty solid offense. They've made some additions to the offensive line. Caleb is prolific. If he's at all, you know, sort of, you know, efficient, we've got a superstar in our hands potentially. He's athletic. He can break pocket and get some rushing yards. I heard, I think it was Dwayne McFarland talking about how they're positioning him as a potential top 12 redraft best ball quarterback this year. Well, look, if he gets anywhere close to top 12 in his rookie season, he's an absolute smash hit as a dynasty asset as a rookie, eh?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen CJ Stroud obviously do you know, elite, you know, production with much less in a kind of worse situation. Caleb Williams, you know, he's a talented, you know, young, you know, up and coming, you know, quarterback surrounded by, you know, three, I mean, at least two elite weapons, you know, and then up and coming, you know, elite prospect in Roma Dunze. And then he has Cole Kmet, who I'm not a big fan of, but I mean, he's no slouch. Right? He's still starting level. Yeah. Gerald Everett. Yeah. And if you think of it, and then at running back, they have Swift, Herbert, and Roshan. I mean, it's kind of crazy if you think about it. At, you know, every skill position on offense, they technically have like three starting type players.
Yeah, they have depth.
I think Tanyan is still there too, right? Tanyan's not really a starter, but
yeah, maybe it's but maybe
still
it's,
there, right?
But it's, what's Burton? What was Burton's name? Trey Burton. Yeah, I think he's still there.
Trey Burton. Yeah. But either way, right? I mean, the fact that they have that many players on offense surrounding him in his rookie year, they drafted an O lineman, you know, who's somewhat developmental, but, you know, they did try to add there. Yep. And there's some continuity from last year. It'd be pretty astronomical odds for him to completely face plant with that. I mean, you would have to be so bad to do that. I don't know if the Bears are that bad where that would happen.
Right. It's gonna be hard for him to fail. You know, that's what we came around on in this conversation was like,
exactly.
Cause one of the things, you know, I don't like to do is take rookies in a startup, especially in the first round, because there is the possibility of Trey Lance, Trey Lance was a first round rookie pick. And I remember the Konami code and the whole thing. I remember everybody telling me, and you know, I was very dubious. I didn't take any Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields or Trey Lance, their rookie years, in any startups. It's just, I don't like to lean into that much uncertainty, but boy, oh boy, I was kind of okay with it here with Caleb. And maybe we got a little bit of stars in the eyes here, Chalk. I mean, but he's young too, you know, because we looked at Burrow and it was really him or Burrow, and Burrow's the more sure thing. But, you know, Caleb's like 6 years, full years younger than him. I mean, you just have such a longer runway. And then we also factored in picks like this, and I think you can do this at the 1.01 in your rookie draft, is you can think there will be an out. There was an out with Trey Lance. There was an out with Justin Fields. There's an out with Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, Zach Wilson and Mac Jones, but they weren't that high a pick. You know, there's even an out right now with Bryce Young. You know, Bryce Young is what, quarterback 15 or something like that in Dynasty. There's believers that he's going to come back this year and be better. Not to say that you'd like to get quarterback 15 price for Caleb, but you could do worse.
Yeah, you could definitely do worse. You know, Trevor Lawrence didn't have the best rookie year. You know, his value, you know, was insulated, you know, even after the first year. You know, the 101, you know, in the NFL, if it's a quarterback, it definitely has a different insulation than any other pick, even if it's a second pick like Zach Wilson. And then, you know, yeah, Trey Lance was definitely a consideration or a concern that we talked about. But then we also, you know, kind of discussed that Caleb Williams is not a developmental prospect like Trey Lance was, right? I mean, it's different college careers. I think we talked about this at length last year, which is like number of starts, right? Yes. Like if you haven't really started that many games, it's not an indicator that you're going to fail, but it's another question mark that you add to the equation.
It's not a positive, especially for quarterbacks.
It's a negative, right? It doesn't mean that you're not going to make it. I mean, Jordan Love or Anthony Richardson, right? I mean, they're already showing out, right? With not that much college, you know, kind of experience, so to say. But those are things that we looked at, and Caleb Williams, right? He wasn't that type of prospect. Right. So I think he's going to come in ready to play. And then, you know, this is something I just thought of when you're mentioning Trey Lance, which was no one liked Jimmy Garoppolo, but when Trey Lance was drafted, it was still a question mark if he even started. Yeah. Like Caleb Williams coming in, like they traded away Justin Fields. They cleared the decks specifically for Caleb. Yeah. And added all these weapons, right? So it wasn't like, hey, like let's add uncertainty and have a controversy. This is no, we're clearing the decks. You're the one.
Yeah, and I think you can hear in the way that we talk about this that we never speak in certainties. You know, like you know, there's always just range of outcomes. You know, and we talked about that with Rome Odunze, and we'll get there in a moment. Marvin Harrison Jr. I think is the 1.02. You know, you can talk me into Jaden Daniels or Malik Nabers or something like that. But for me, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. in the DeAndre Hopkins role in that Arizona offense with Kyler Murray on a contract is, I don't know, it's about as solid as you can get. It's about as safe a bet as you can make. And it has as much ceiling as you could want. Pimp the model. He's one of the highest rated players in the model's history. So yeah, there's really, I can't imagine, you know, a downside. I want to talk about an exit ramp, dude. You could sell him after whenever the hell you want for whatever you want. I mean, he could have three games of three targets and you'd be like, put him on the block and someone will give you whatever you want. I mean, you're getting return for Marvin Harrison, unless he, you know, falls off a building or something.
Yeah. I mean, Marvin Harrison, it's just another one of those too safe of a prospect, you know. I mean, it would just be like the most, you know, unheard of, you know, unforeseen type of circumstances that, you know, would cause Marvin Harrison to fail. I mean, tied to Kyler Murray, playing, like you said, the DeAndre Hopkins role. I mean, we've seen what Kyler likes to do with the player like that, and we've seen him succeed and have, you know, pretty much his career years with someone like that. And then you have like, you know, Trey McBride working like underneath, right? Like working inside and underneath. So it's going to keep defenses honest, you know, around the field. So I think that's going to be, you know, fun to watch. And I think, you know, Marvin Harrison walks in and could easily see 150 targets.
Yeah, absolutely.
You
know, plus, totally, totally.
You know, just easily.
Yeah, it's so like when we start doing our projections, which we started talking about doing, it's going to be hard to keep Marvin Harrison Jr.'s target number below 130 or 140. It's going to be almost impossible. You're going to be like, who am I going to give him to? Michael Wilson?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, no, dude is going to be throwing it to Marvin Harrison Jr. all the time. So yeah, him and Trey McBride are going to go off. I'm going to ask you straight up in a standard super flex league, whatever, like, you know, roster is, you know, don't make it up. You know, who are you taking in this, in the three spot?
That's a really good question. I think I'm taking Malik Nabers. Like I've been flip-flopping, and I have Jaden Daniels in the same tier. So it's just kind of wild. It's like thinking about it a little bit longer.
That's why I put you on the spot too.
I wanted to.
Yeah, no, I wanted to ask it that way to put you right on the spot, because I was just on the 103 and I was on the clock and I hemmed and hawed, and guess what I did?
You took Malik Nabers?
I sure did.
Yeah. That's your boy. I mean, that's your boy.
I sure did.
You know, I mean, you've been super high on Malik Nabers since the jump. And you know, it makes a lot of sense that you would, right? I mean, scores right there with Marvin Harrison Jr. Also walks in. I mean, the quarterback situation, obviously not as good, but he walks into a situation where he's getting all the targets too,
yes,
right? And he's going to do a lot of damage.
Yep.
I mean, he doesn't even need deep targets. He doesn't need outside targets. I mean, he can do really well with those. But he can take them. You can take them underneath ones too, right?
Yeah. So, absolutely. Yeah. So I did take Malik Nabers.
I think the scheme too.
Yeah.
With Daboll, right? Like I think he's walking in just like Marvin Harrison Jr. into a situation where the value can just skyrocket from day one, right? It's just producing. So
I totally agree. I was just seeing if you were going to say Jaden Daniels. I think there's for me, it's a three-man group. Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy, and Drake May. You know, you can talk about Roma Dunze if you want, but for me, at this particular point, you have to start considering these quarterbacks. Rome is a great player. I've got nothing bad to say. You can take Rome over any one of these three quarterbacks, and I would not criticize you for it. So don't take it the wrong way. I just think that in general, those three have to be considered in a super flex league right now. You know, Drake May's got draft capital. Jaden Daniels has draft capital. Jaden Daniels has huge ceiling with fantasy ceiling with his legs. Both McCarthy and May are very athletic. Everybody talks about May's athleticism as being sneaky. I think both May and McCarthy are about similar. The only difference is that actually May is bigger. That's the negative, but Jaden Daniels is smaller too. I mean, you know, we talk about this, but you know, they all have their concerns and they all have their upside. I think all three of them have really, really solid upside in the league and in fantasy. You know, I think JJ goes into a better situation than the other two. So like you could start to just make a case. I do think JJ is the better quote unquote NFL prospect out of the three, me personally. That's not necessarily the popular opinion. So all these things are just data points as you look at it. And I think you ought to be thinking about all three of those 1, 2, 3 right there, or 4, 5, 6 as it is.
Yeah. 100%. It's like the three-sided coin flip here. Right.
Yeah.
I like JJ McCarthy a ton, right? Like you said, he walks into like the best situation. Jaden Daniels has the rushing upside, you know, but then like Drake May is like kind of the one that's I feel like has been left out of the conversation more often than not recently. Yeah. But the funny thing is, going into this last college season, this last, you know, NFL or college season, Drake May was like the quarterback 2 of the class, wasn't he? Like it was like almost like debated that he might be quarterback 1 over Caleb.
Yes.
It's not like Drake May had a terrible year either. It was up and down to an extent, but it wasn't by any stretch of the means like bad. JJ McCarthy won the Natty. And then Jaden McDaniels won the Heisman, right? So, I mean, is that why Drake May is right now being looked at as like the third out of the bunch, like by many, including myself? Like, I don't know. I'm bringing that up, speaking kind of rhetorically in a way, where, you know, are we just kind of ignoring Drake May because, you know, the other shiny objects, I guess.
You know, for me, I'll tell you what it is. First of all, my team was on, you know, my New England Patriots were picking 3rd. And, you know, I can only tell you emotionally how I felt. And I felt like I wanted them to take JJ McCarthy because this is a football take. This is a, I want my team to be good for the next 10 years take. And the reason for that was because Drake May makes a lot of sloppy plays. And, you know, you hear, oh, they can clean that up in the NFL and all the rest of it. But you know who wasn't making sloppy plays was CJ Stroud last year. You know, when you watch a guy, there's no CJ Stroud in this draft, by the way. That, let's just fucking say that. Doesn't mean that anybody can't be better than him. I'm just saying as a prospect, when we watched and witnessed CJ Stroud, it was like dot, dot, dot. Like he's just fucking dotting people like left and right. And yeah, he had great receivers, but they did not have to come out of stride. They were just, I mean, he is so, so good. You don't see that with any of these prospects. So all of them have a growth to go through. And I felt like JJ had the least amount of growth to go through in that regard. And that may be wrong. I'm not even saying I'm right and I want to argue and tell you you're wrong. I'm just saying that's the way I felt about it after watching the minimal tape I did, you know, because I don't have time to watch every fucking game. I don't have all 22 on all of it. It's like, so I'm not no expert when it comes to it, but what I saw, that's what I saw. You know, I saw a lot of bailing the pocket with May and a lot of like, even as I said, the highlight when he was drafted, the highlight that played on NFL Network or ESPN, whatever network it was on, I don't remember, was like, it was like, watch this. And he's like bailing off his back foot and throwing a fucking dime to somebody in the end zone. But it's like, even that's like not what you want him to be doing, you know? So some of that stuff is a little bit scary for me, but I think we've talked about it. Probably two or three of these guys are going to bust anyway. You know, it's like the math is against you, which is why it makes drafting these guys over a guy like Malik Nabers a scary proposition. But, you know, you need quarterbacks and super flex. So for those reasons, I'm interested in all three. Look, if I was on the clock and I've seen some Drake Mays slip into 1-8, 1-9, 1-10, 1-11, hell no, he ain't getting by me. I mean, I'm not letting that happen at all. I mean, no chance am I letting any of these three quarterbacks get past me, at, you know, at any of those picks. I'm sure you agree.
100% agree. Yeah. I mean, you know, these, you know, yeah, I mean, super flex leagues, top six picks, right? These three rounded out, take whatever order you prefer. But I would not let these quarterbacks get by. Yeah. Is that they're not even early first, right? I mean, you're getting first round quarterbacks, in the middle of the first round in super flex. Yeah. I mean, it's a good value, yeah, a good right? Value. And they're all starters. You know, they all, I mean, I guess except Drake May. So,
yeah.
I mean, Jaden Daniels has, you know, like McLaurin, you know, McCarthy has, you know, Jefferson and Addison. So, you know, they're at least walking into some decent situations.
Lord knows I love Javon Baker. I don't care fuck what the model says. You know, I'm into that dude. It's true. There you go. There's another example. I don't care. I will be drafting Javon Baker with excited an excited push of the button for sure. At ADP for sure. Roma Dunze, you know, is this player that we talked about just a little, but I think we talked about his downside in a conversation when we picked him. And I asked you, I said, if he has the downside, like if he's good, but he has like a, you know, JSN first year or even a CeeDee Lamb first year. I'm not saying he's those types of players. I'm saying he's in those that type of situation where he's boxed out by two veteran skilled target earning wide receivers on his own team. That's okay. You know, because if you take him at his current value and he does what those two players did in their first years, you're fine. You're still fine because, you know, Keenan Allen's probably going to move on. Probably a 1 year player. I mean, God, if he stays more than 1 or 2 years, you're going to be really pissed off about it. But you get my point is Rome should be able to elevate if he has that type of season. And that's the downside. I mean, if you're taking him at his current cost, we got him in the early fourth round of a startup. Most of these guys, JSN, Addison, Rashi, they go in the fifth round. So, you know, if he ends up being that type of a player where you're like, yeah, he's Rashi Rice this year, he's probably still going to be worth more next year than Rashi. Well, obviously what Rashi is right now, but I'm just talking, you know, Rashi or Addison or JSN is right now, because I think people see him as a better player and will have excuses built in because of the other two players. Right.
100%. 100%. So yeah, I think even in the reasonable, you know, lower range of outcomes, right. Like doesn't do as well. Like we expect, right. He's going into a situation with two veteran, you know, studs. You know, and you know, if he doesn't get the numbers that we expect, hopefully we see like at least 600 yards, right? Even in that situation, yeah. You know, then yeah, then I think he maybe slips around in a startup draft. Right? I think he still goes in that fifth round, you know, range next year, right? If that happens, and then on the other end, you know, just like you know, just as reasonable on the success side, you know, then you're maybe seeing a you know round jump into the third round, right? So going from the fourth round to the third round could be really interesting and exciting, right? So then he's in the mix with you know guys like a Jalen Waddle or a Chris Olave, yeah. Right? If he has a kind of exciting first year, and if he has an exciting first year in this situation, it might be even bigger.
Yes,
bigger hype.
He also has you know? Touchdown Great. Upside as an out. So if he doesn't necessarily get all of the yards, receptions, targets that we really want for him, he's a 10-plus touchdown opportunity because he's – look, when you talk about Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, they're not exactly goal line guys. Komet's not exactly an imposing receiving player either. I mean, look, if Caleb gets to, you know, 30 touchdowns or something like that, you could easily see Rome with, you know, 8 to 12. So he has touchdown equity upside easy. As well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've seen guys like Devonta Smith put up like 7 touchdowns consistently, even next to someone like AJ Brown. So I think, you know, 8 to 10, you know, even 12 touchdowns potentially for someone like Rome Odunze is within reason. I mean, yeah. You know, maybe closer to 10, but I think within reason.
Unless it's some crazy, super ridiculous tight end premium league, is that your sure top 7?
Yeah, that's my sure top 7. Like locked in.
Lock it in,
you know, locked in. Yeah. Lock it in.
Lock it in. And, you know, I was on Theo's show and he said top 8 and I know who he's including there. It's Brock Bowers. And I'm cool with that. I got no problem with that. I'm not anti Brock Bowers. I am anti tight end early in rookie drafts generally. So for that reason, we can have this conversation here because I think the next guy, like we talked, me and Theo were talking about players 9 through whatever, you know, that sort of next tier. Well, I'm going to throw Brock Bowers in that too a little bit because the one player that I answered as to who should be on my radar at pick 9, I would argue should at least be on your radar at pick 8 if you're in a super flex league, and that is unfortunately Bo Nix. You don't have to like him. You don't have to think he's any good, but – I mean, you know, he's going to be given an opportunity, it would appear, and a quarterback with an opportunity, shit. I was saying it on the show with Theo. Look, there's 24 starting super flex spots in a 12-team league. So if he's a top 20, top 25 quarterback in the NFL, he's useful and has trade equity immediately. Kind of have to consider
such
that,
good
right?
points. I mean, kind of such good points. I have him right now. This is crazy. This is another one that's like I'm flip flopping, but I have him right now as my 8. I have Bo Nix as my 8. And if I feel gross having
it feels
to be
awful.
Honest, like
yeah.
It feels so gross, you know. And then I have you know Brock Bowers in that mix. So 8 to 10 is my tier, and I have Bo Nix. I got my boy Ladd in here, and I got Brock Bowers. So it's. I love Ladd McConkey, but I can't justify drafting him over Bo Nix in a super flex league. I just don't know right now. Although I could look back and say, why didn't I do something like that? Why didn't I not do that?
That's right. This is why we're talking about it because it's true. Like you look back at classes and you go, dude, remember when we drafted fucking Bo Nix over Ladd McConkey? What the fuck? Right. Or over Brian Thomas Jr. or over Xavier Worthy because these guys are the next in line. You know, Brian Thomas Jr. Yeah. gets tremendous draft capital. He was prolific. If not very good in the model because of, look, some of the things that we, while we're talking real quick, yards per route run, first downs per route run, he was not all that good until his final season. And even then, it was a very prolific offense. So some of his raw data, raw stats, aren't quite as impressive as they appear on the surface. Then he goes out and he runs a fucking 4.33. Dude's a monster. I'm going to give him a lot of credit, but, you know, I think it was, excuse me. I don't remember who said it. It might have been Harmon, who's like, you know, 68% of his routes were either go routes or curls. So he's either running straight down the field, or he's running straight down the field and then stopping. Like, that's pretty much what he does, you know. So can he do more? Maybe. I don't know. You know, this is what we don't know. This is what the model is saying. Hey, wait a minute. I don't know if he can do any of that shit. You know, someone will say, oh, of course he could do it. It's like, okay, we don't know that. And for that reason, you have to be at least a little bit hesitant with a guy like that. Whereas Ladd has no raw stats. He's all per route run. He is just an absolute target magnet when he steps on the field. And he breaks tackles. He's just like a first down machine. So for those reasons, and he's tied to now Justin Herbert, this is the reason why maybe it sounds crazy for us to have Ladd, this little white kid, over this Adonis on the outside who was drafted ahead of him. But for those reasons, that's why we do. And I'm with you. I will be drafting Ladd ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. Xavier Worthy's another case. Model really likes him. He's a different type of player, and he's tested, you know, Patrick Mahomes, also a great situation with Marquise Brown going out the door next year as well. So I know you love Ladd, but this feels like a tier where you can start to make some trades and move around.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So, you know, I did mention like my 8 to 10 is a tier, but right there is Worthy and Brian Thomas Jr. I'm a little bit lower on Brian Thomas Jr. I'll be honest. And I think consensus. So I do have him just outside my top 12. But I think Xavier Worthy should be in that conversation. I just think that he has a little bit more risk tied to him than someone like Ladd McConkey, which is why you know, I'm shying away a little bit there. Because like just like the way you pointed out with Ladd, there's so many things that are just looking, you know, really good in his favor.
Yeah.
You know, including the early day two, you know, draft capital and all that, on top of everything else. So I think that there's a conversation to be said, and I think there is room to move around, right?
Yeah.
So if you have the 108 and, you know, you're like, you know what, I'm okay with one of these guys, dealer's choice, you know, then you can move up, you know, move back 1, 2, 3 spots and still get, you know, your guy or someone comparable. And this is kind of the rare, you know, maybe it's the rare bailout kind of scenario where, you know, we're really about best player available, right?
Yeah.
Like when I'm drafting, I'm trying to take the best player available, you know, obviously tiers help a ton. But this tier right here allows you to pick. I mean, if you need a quarterback, you have Bo Nix. If you need a wide receiver, you can take Ladd,
yes,
or Worthy. If you need a tight end, you can take Bauer. So it kind of lets you take the best player available while also filling need, right? So this is one of those rare occasions where you kind of have a tier with everybody, with the mix of everything. So
yeah, I totally agree. And it sounds like if you said that Brian Thomas is just outside your top 12, then you have Jonathan Brooks, I would assume, or another running back over him, which I'm totally fine with. You know that. I love Jonathan Brooks. I think he's going to get the Canales treatment that Rashad White was offered, but he is coming off an ACL, and this team does potentially suck. So for those reasons, I am a little bit tempered on Jonathan Brooks, not on his talent, not really even on his opportunity, but on the ceiling. Coming off an injury and not a great offense are the two sort of downsides on that. But I still have him as my RB1 in the class, just a little less excited to pull the trigger.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been seeing some screenshots on some of these early rookie drafts, and I've seen him like early second round, right? So he's not even, you don't even have to take him in the first round. So I think, you know, me, I do have him at 12, and I do think that's high because you don't need to draft him at 12. And this is, again, where tiers are important, right? Because this is kind of the beginning of my next tier, so to say, with guys like Brooks, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. And then there's some of these names that I'm not really thrilled about also in the mix, along with Troy Franklin, right?
Yeah.
So I got Troy Franklin in this tier. And then you got guys that I'm not super thrilled about.
Go back a quick second, because here's the thing. With Jonathan Brooks, I just got him at the 114 in a 16-team league, so I'm with you. You know,
yep.
That was great.
Yep.
I mean, it's what am I going to do? I'm so happy. I got my RB1 at pick 14. So that's basically like the 202. So you're absolutely right. He's slipping into that early second round, which I think at that point is a great value. I would ask you, because while we're talking about Jonathan Brooks, guys on the clock, he's got maybe Jonathan Brooks in front of him. Is there any other running back you would consider in the same tier as Jonathan Brooks right now?
The only one would be Trey Benson, but I think he's still a tier below, right? Like, and that's the only one I could have an argument for, because he does, you know, land in Arizona, right, with James Conner ahead of him. But we all know James Conner is going to miss, you know, definitely a handful of games next year. And I'm not sure about his contract situation, but I'd bet that he's out the door sooner than later. So yeah, Trey Benson is interesting. But I don't think he belongs in that same tier, right? So I feel like if you're looking for a running back and you miss on Brooks, or you're not a fan of Brooks, or just a little bit, you know, not willing to invest that early second round in Jonathan Brooks, then, you know, you can target a Trey Benson. I'm guessing he's going in the mid second rounds, maybe late second round, depending on the draft and how, you know, kind of wide receiver happy these your league mates are. But I think Trey Benson kind of lands in that kind of mid-second round range.
Yeah.
You know, I think I have him at like 206 range right now.
I tend to agree with you. I think I would put Trey Benson in the same tier as Jonathan Brooks. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not saying that with conviction, but I do have Brooks ahead. But, boy, Benson lands in a much better spot. I mean, if those two spots were reversed, I mean, you know, the spot helps. Because, I mean, imagine if it was flipped. You'd really like Jonathan Brooks. I mean, we know that. So I think that's one. So I think that does clear a pretty clear top 14 players for me. And I think that's a tier. I think that's a tier for me. If you don't want to put Benson there, that's fine. But to me, that's pretty clear tier. And even if we don't like Brian Thomas Jr., almost every single time he's going to be drafted in that top 14, like 100% of the time. So he's part of that tier. So to know that after 14 picks, after the 202, it's almost always going to go something like that. There may be a sneaky something or other, but I would bet almost that's going to be a huge percentage where those 14 guys go first 14 in Superflex rookie drafts. Then I think you have to start asking the Michael Penix question. And I don't like asking it, but I did have some feedback with a friend. It was Beasy, and we were talking about Michael Penix, and he was talking about who he was picking in the first round and who he was targeting in the second round. He was a rebuilding team, and it was between Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers. I said, take Nabers, because as a rebuilder, you just want to hit, you know, you want to hit a bat 1,000. You don't want to miss, and you know, you don't want to have to trade away. I mean, this is a 21-year-old, probably even 20 right now, 21-year-old kid who's just going to be awesome. Just take him and move on. And I said, as a rebuilder, Penix is a pretty good target. It's not a bad target for a rebuilder. You don't really give a shit if he scores points for you in year one, but as the eighth overall pick, he's unlike Hendon Hooker. It's not like, you know, it's not Hendon Hooker last year wasn't guaranteed to ever see the field, whereas pick eight, pretty sure they're going to want to see what they got in this dude after this fucking fiasco. You know what I mean? At some point or another, the noise is going to be loud. I mean, if Cousins goes out and has 2-3 interception games, the standard Monday night Cousins blow up game where all of a sudden they're 2-3 and he just threw a pick six to lose it, the noise in Atlanta is going to be loud for Michael Penix. What do you think?
It's going to be loud, and I think you're spot on. I think I'm having trouble with Penix myself. The more I think about it, so originally when he got drafted at 8, right, I had him pretty high up, right? I had him kind of right there at the, like, you know, end of the first round, early second round. Just kind of just based on what you're saying, right? Like, at some point he's going to get a chance. Like, you don't draft someone at 8 and then not ever play them.
Right? Like, he's Trey Lance, kind of didn't get a chance, but kind of did and got hurt. Like, that was a little bit weird. Like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I mean, it's possible. It's not like a guarantee.
It's possible. Yeah.
It's
but it's not nothing guaranteed, right?
But if you're also taking a guy who could be prolific in a great offense in the mid second round as a super flex pick, I mean, it's a pretty delicious spot. And if you think about all the players after those top 14,
who else is there?
Come on. Is there really a sure thing after that?
No,
because
you're looking at, you know, what you're looking at, like, you know, Franklin, Pearsall, Coleman, Burton. Yeah, Burton.
The other running backs, like Sanat. Yep. Like, yeah, okay, but am I really going to take fucking Sanat over Penix? I mean, I don't think that's a good choice. You see what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to pick Michael Penix. I don't want to do it.
But if you spent like a 2-3 on him, like, is it really that bad? Like, you know?
No. Should be able to get a second for him, even if he's riding the pine at some point. Someone will pay you a future second to get off him. I mean, you know what I mean? So, like, I think it's worth the investment in a super flex league. I'm not saying you have to pick him at that spot. It's not like, oh, if you pass on Pettis, you're an idiot. No, no, no. You have to consider him at that spot. And you have to really think about, is this the right thing for my team, you know?
Yeah, the last Atlanta Falcons quarterback taken in the second round of rookie drafts was Desmond Ridder, so no big deal, you know?
Whoops. All right, so then I look at the rest, right? So I think Penix is that sort of linchpin of the top 14, and then whatever comes after that, okay? And I think whatever comes after that is spaghetti. I mean, just straight fucking spaghetti. Like, there's going to be so much variation to the order that things go here. It's a lot of get your guy, trade for value. Don't worry about ADP at all anymore. ADP goes out the window after the mid-second. Right after this 14-15 area, don't worry about ADP. Just don't even worry about it. Play the board the best you can. The only reason you play ADP is to try to think about what someone might do. But even then, don't even think that way. Don't think, oh, I can move back and still get Burton or Pearsall or whoever you think you're going to move back for. You're probably not. You know, so don't worry about it. The guy that is intriguing for me that we don't really love because of the model and a lot of different indicators, but I'm starting to warm a little bit, but I don't know if I want to, is Keon Coleman.
Yeah. Me too. I mean, he's cracked my top 20, which is a feat for him. So I'll give him that.
I mean,
you know, so he's cracked my top 20.
He's walking, you know, I did that exercise. I'm sure you saw it where it was like, these 16 players will likely be their team's number one, whatever, you know, tight end one. Mm-hmm. You know, I even think Eric made this list because it's like, who the fuck's their tight end? You know, it's like,
I like that. I like that. You know, I like that post you did.
You know, it's just interesting. It was just a thought experiment. I literally wrote down every pick and I just kind of went through and put where I thought I went, looked at the, you know, the depth charts and where do they fit in? And Keon Coleman's like wide receiver one. I mean, maybe not, obviously. I mean, Khalil Shakir. Did they sign? What's his face? The kid from the Raiders, Hunter Renfrow, I think. They just signed him too. But they got.
Oh, they did.
I think so. Interesting. Unless I'm dreamt that. I was maybe. I didn't get high today, so maybe not. You know, it was like. But Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, Dalton Kincaid, James Cook, all guys who earned targets. I'm not suggesting that he's just going to go out there and like light up targets, but I do think like they drafted him with a purpose. One thing I didn't like was the GM was talking about him as the, you know, the X. We're going to play him at X, and that's that. I didn't love that. I mean, this is a guy that you want to really, I would think you'd want to try and get big slot, you know, work as opposed to just sending him out on an island against, you know, top tier corners. That part's the part that scares the shit out of me. I mean, because I don't think he can beat top tier corners in the NFL. That's just what I think based off of what the model spit back in terms of first downs and targets per route run.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But you have him in your top 20 now?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't have much to say. I have my top 20. I don't feel great about him. Like, you know, he ends up at number one in that situation. And he had like decent draft capital. So that's kind of why I bumped him up. I don't feel great about him, honestly. I don't think I'm ever going to draft him, even if he's available there.
Right.
I'll just take Roman Wilson or Burton or,
there you go.
You know, someone else.
So talk about, so when I was on, that's funny that you say that, because I was on Theo's show and he asked for a landing spot that I loved. And of course, I said Roman Wilson. Got to love that landing spot. I mean, right? I mean, just absolute money.
Yeah, man. He just seems like the type of player that would fit the Mike Tomlin system, right? And kind of just you know, kind of hard nose, you know, solid receiver, you know, great kind of complement to to Pickens. I think they're just going to play tough football, you know, and I think he just fits well, in that team and it's a need. Russell Wilson is probably going to start, and you have Justin Fields, and both those quarterbacks could air it out. So I think it can make it real interesting with both Pickens and Roman Wilson, being able to command targets to an extent, right? Obviously Pickens, we've seen it. And I think Roman Wilson, falls into a beauty of a spot.
Yeah, and if you could pick, this is putting you on the spot, but a wide receiver who you didn't like their landing spot, was there one that you kind of can think of that you didn't like?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
I think you'll probably hate me for this, but Javon Baker, even though I think there's not much competition there, I just feel like that offense has been so shaky that I don't know if he ends up, he's with the tied with the rookie quarterback. So I don't know if that, is going to be helpful for him to really kind of, right. I mean, I think, but I like him as a prospect, right. And I know, the team was pretty high on him. But I'm not a huge fan of that landing spot, I would say, if I had to pick something.
So I picked a player that I didn't like and also didn't like his landing spot, which is Adonai Mitchell. Landing in Indianapolis, first of all, he didn't get the draft capital he was promised. So that's the part of the landing spot that's not good. He lands in Indianapolis, which is a good team, but I don't think it's a talent fit. He's an outside sort of, contested catch, downfield, big play merchant. I tell you what, they have a target eater in Michael Pittman. They have a slot guy over the middle that I would think an RPO Anthony Richardson type player would prefer, as opposed to testing outside corners for no good reason. So I really think that his target rate is going to be a whole lot lower there than it could be with maybe a Justin Herbert type, or if he had landed with Dallas and Dak maybe throwing it up to him a little bit, but. I just really, really hate the landing spot for Adonai Mitchell. And, the fade continues for us. I think that we're going to be completely zero shares, zero cares with Adonai Mitchell given cost. But one thing I wanted to mention is we just talked about a few of them. This is a group of receivers that I think when you go through and you say, okay, Ricky Pearsall, Keon Coleman, Jermaine Burton, Jalen Polk, Troy Franklin, Javon Baker, Jalen McMillan is interesting, actually. Adonai Mitchell, Malachi Corley, Xavier Leggett, that whole group. What's that, like 10, 12 guys? I mean, that's a huge group. That group is going to push someone down to you that you probably like. Like, our priority players in that group, I mean, why don't you say what they are, because I already know what they are, but let's just see if you agree. Like, priority players.
Yeah, like Vidal. Kimani Vidal is going to be in that mix, right? Like Sinat, Marshawn Lloyd, Javon Baker, we mentioned.
Yep.
I like Jalen Wright. Remember, we talked about Jalen Wright landing kind of in a sneaky spot. Yeah, I mean, Achan's there, but I mean, it's still sneaky, right? Like, we're just waiting for Mostert to turn to a husk. And then Jalen McMillan, that's sneaky, right? I'm a Tampa guy. Yes, I mean those are some fun, interesting guys. Malik Washington probably fall I'm guessing it'd be like late third, early fourth, even.
Absolutely,
depending on right?
Yeah.
So Malik, yeah, keep an eye on Malik Washington, like early fourth round. I mean, if he,
what about
Malik Washington would be fun in the fourth round.
Before we get that far down the board, though, what about Troy Franklin and Jermaine Burton?
Yeah, so Troy Franklin, I have him. Yeah, I still like Troy Franklin. Yeah, Jermaine Burton. Yeah, those guys are definitely going to be in that range too.
You're seeing Troy Franklin higher up my board. 3.01 in a lot of situations. Burton,
that's crazy. Because I have him. I'll take him in the second round all day. Like, I didn't mention those guys because I have them already.
That's
like
what I'm talking about.
Above, or, you know.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, like the tier above.
These
so,
are priority players. So, but at ADP, you're going to see Keon Coleman and Ricky Pearsall and Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Legette push Troy Franklin and Jermaine Burton down, and I would add Roman Wilson to that. Nice. You know, and those type of players push down. And yeah, you're going to be able to pick up those types of players, just like we were picking up Jaden Reed and Marvin Mims, whether successfully or unsuccessfully. Although I do like Troy Franklin, Mims, Nix, Sutton. Look, I think that's your receiving core there. I think someone's going to succeed out of that. And I think it's, I don't know, man. It's going to be very interesting to see. Look, Nix and Franklin had a thing last year. They're buddies. They're in the same spot now. I do think there'll be a little bit of favoritism there. You know, we do like Franklin pre-draft. He did fall in the draft, and the model still loves him. There's a lot of positives with Troy Franklin, and I'll be eager to push the button on Troy Franklin every single time if I can. You know, every draft 100%. That I can, I'm gonna pick him. You know, and Jermaine Burton, I love. And then you're right. There's so many of those running backs that are in the same type of situation, whether it's Jalen Wright, Corum, Marshawn Lloyd, Kamani Vidal, Will Shipley, Tyrone Tracy. Some people like Estime, Ray Davis. Those two guys are interesting sort of handcuff, you know, who knows what will happen in front of them type players. But yeah, I think Jalen Wright, you bring it up. He is my RB3. And the reason is because I think Miami's a two-back system, period, end of story, and especially a two-back system if Achan is one of them.
Yeah, 100%, right? They're not gonna just ride him only. And Jalen Wright would be a nice compliment. And that'd be a fun backfield
once that
takes shape.
Yeah, absolutely. And then for Corum, you know, as much as I like Corum, I mean, it made my Kyren Williams trade before the draft feel really good, but I still think Kyren's going to be the lead back and Corum's going to be the, you know, the breather back and the apprentice, right? Because who were we comping Corum to the entire season, the offseason, excuse me, I was comping him to Kyren Williams every time. I think he is so close to what Kyren Williams is in terms of back. And then McVay comes out and says the exact same thing. I mean, they are very comparable backs. I think they're interchangeable, but I think Kyren's going to get veteran deference and Corum's going to be that injury, you know, compliment and the guy who's going to give you know, a little bit of breath to Kyren's volume. I don't think Kyren's dead. I do not think that.
No, I don't think Kyren's dead. And I feel like McVay, I mean, he's done this many times or multiple times, right? So he has the veteran workhorse that he's going to ride. Then he's going to draft the rookie, right? To kind of spell and kind of be the breather back. And then it changes, right? So it's either after that first year or after the second year that no matter how good the other back did, like the starter, McVay would just switch it all up, right? I mean, we saw it with, you know, Henderson, with Akers. Did we see with Gurley too, or was that because of injury? But I feel it was an injury, right? But I feel like maybe because of Gurley, like he just like, dude, I'm not dealing with that anymore. Yeah. Right? I'm not gonna be stuck to one guy. But he's done it multiple times. I mean, Henderson wasn't really a slouch, and then he drafts Akers, and then you know Akers did okay, and then he takes Kyren, and then even after Akers had a blow up game, in the playoffs or at the end of this year,
still didn't work.
Still replaced him, right? Still replaced him.
Yeah. So he's fickle. Marshawn Lloyd got draft capital, and I think he's just has to be considered. Like, you know, Graham Barfield loved him in terms of yards created. You know, the film watchers liked him. He's very explosive. The metrics like him a lot in terms of size, speed, elusiveness, tackle breaking. Like, he does a lot of great things. He finds himself on a good team with a lot of other young players, but parked behind the contract of Josh Jacobs. And I don't think it's going to be much of a two-headed backfield. I do think he's going to be, you know, a solid handcuff. I do think he'll elevate past AJ Dillon with ease, you know. But given all that, I would ask, you can talk about Marshawn Lloyd if you want, but I would say given all that, this is a question. When is too early to consider sixth round pick and love of my life, Kimani Vidal?
When is too early? Yeah,
or you know what I'm saying? Like, when is it reasonable to consider him? You know, when's it?
I think the mid to late second round.
I love it. Yeah.
Honestly, like, I mean, I'd be okay. Like, if you said I'm gonna take him at 2-7, 2-8, 2-9, you know, like,
oh my god,
like I wouldn't be mad at it. I mean, for me, like, I'd probably target him more like end of the second yeah. round, you know, like, just because, like, I don't think he'll last very long in the third, yeah. right? Like, I don't think he, like, right as you get there, it's like,
yeah,
I mean, I think it's like pick 22 is like probably the cutoff, really. Like, if you want him, it's probably pick 20 or closer there, but I think pick 22 is really the cutoff for Kimani Vidal.
I love it.
If you really want him.
I love it.
Yeah.
This is so good. I mean, a sixth round pick from Troy. That's how we're talking about him. It's crazy, right? I mean,
that's crazy, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's Gus Edwards away from being the lead back in a Harbaugh, Herbert.
How dare you?
Greg Roman.
Offense. How dare you not talk about my boy J.K. Dobbins like that? The candle's on. You see the candle? Oh, man. I've got a candle on. I mean, we've been talking about the candle staying lit for our players, huh? A candle stays lit for J.K. Dobbins in this house. Don't you dare.
I mean, might as well, man. Might as well, because
the other guy the other guy who doesn't have much dead bodies to climb over to be somebody is Tyrone Tracy. The profile is not as robust as Kimani Vidal's, but the athleticism and the peripherals are very tantalizing. Would you say that Tyrone Tracy is a priority third round player?
I think he's in the discussion of a priority third round player.
Certainly absolutely. A priority fourth rounder.
You know, 100%. 100% fourth rounder. Third rounder only because, like, we talked about some of those receivers, right? Yep. It gets, you know, you got a lot of those receivers that we want to probably, you know, pluck. But priority fourth round for sure, right? I think he's in a... I mean, if he can't pass Matt Breida and, you know...
Devin Singletary.
Eric Gray? Devin Singletary and Eric Gray. Yeah. You know,
yeah, he should I'd be able surprised. To get to
maybe
RB2.
Devin Singletary could hold right.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
You know, the other thing too is he's a special teams guy, so he's going to be on the field. Oh, he's going to be active, excuse me. So if someone gets hurt, he can be thrust into action. And yeah, I mean, he's an interesting player for sure. I mean, the depth chart is just so barren that, you know, you got to figure he's got a pathway to get on the field. You mentioned your boy Jalen McMillan. They went with Trey Palmer last year, but Jalen McMillan has more draft capital and I'd say a better prospect than Trey Palmer was. I think last year we liked Trey Palmer a little bit, but I think Jalen McMillan's just a better player, especially in the slot. Do you agree with that? And do you think Jalen McMillan is worth some attention in the third round?
Yeah, I do. Tampa Bay loves drafting receivers too. Yeah. I mean, they churn them, you know, and to varying degrees of success. Yep. You know, Trey Palmer was fun, right? And I got steamed up, you know, about him quite a bit. He had some, you know, nice touchdowns. But, you know, I think, like you said, Jalen McMillan is just a better overall prospect, better overall player at the position. Probably fits that offense a little bit, you know, better than Trey Palmer does as well, just given the versatility and the profile. So, yeah, I like that pick. And I actually like to have him on my team. You know, in that kind of end of third round, mid end of third round.
All right. So I love it. I think that's about right. I think, you know, so sometimes it's like the macro stuff, like how we kind of look at the class. And I think, you know, I'm a proponent of just sussing out all moves. Like, you know, what's it look like? You know, one of the things that Theo asked me on the show was like, what would you do? Is there an arbitrage play on Caleb? And I sort of mentioned that I felt like you and I thought that his market value was increasing. So it's hard to really arbitrage him into Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or JJ because, excuse me, those managers who hold those picks probably aren't going to pay the requisite value that you really need to come off of Caleb. You know, so there's all these thoughts that you should be thinking about, right? That's the more important part, is that you should be thinking about how you can extract value, how you can, you know, I'm always a big fan, and this is my favorite type of trade chalk. Like, let's say that we're at the 108, because this is the type of stuff that I think really, player take aside, you guys have to be always thinking about this. Let's say I'm at the 108 and Bowers is there. The top seven that we just talked about is off the board. Bowers and Nix and everything is there. If I can trade that 1.08 for a 25 first and the 20, you know, whatever, you fill it in. Obviously, the earlier the second, the better, but you can sometimes trade that pick for a future first plus a later pick in the very same draft you're in. And you know what? I don't even mind paying that sometimes if you're trying to get a hammer, as the boys over at Dynasty Trades and Five say. In other words, if you're thinking, hey, man, my first is going to be late. This second round is not as good. I'm moving up to get a fucking guy. Okay, great. But if you're also should be sussing that out on the other side, like, is there a sell opportunity? Can I sell back out of this pick? And, you know, I went to try and move up in a draft just earlier today, and I got told I was an idiot. I moved on. It's fine. It's no big deal. So I couldn't move up with what I had to offer or whatever. But I'm always looking at those things. And that trade back move has gained me so much, you know, profit over the years, because you just replace the pick, but you still got a player. And just like last year, if you ended up getting Laporta at the 211 instead of Kincaid at the 110, you profited with that and you got a first round pick next year. Like, that's crazy. Now, granted, you can also lose. You could have had some good player and instead you got Marvin Mims and you kind of crapped up, but you still have the first rounder for your troubles. So I love those types of trades. Do you like that one? And if there's anything else that made you think of, what else, you know, what other picks, I mean, what other trades you'd like to try and accomplish?
No, I mean, yeah, no, I think that's like perfectly spot on, right? And then, you know, looking at the tiers, right? Sure. Like, yeah, wherever you're at, right? If you're like in the second and you're sitting at the 2-2, right? And you're like, I can jump to the 2-6, gain a late second or bump up, you know, one of my thirds into a second on top of that. And now you're sitting on like 2 seconds, right? You're basically doubling your odds instantly by making one move, yeah. Right? A lot of times when you're on the clock, even more than a startup draft, you know, when that pick is on the clock, people will come and knock on the door and be willing to pay up for their guys, yes. Right? Because this is when convictions are strongest, right? Like, everybody does prospecting, you know, everybody has a process for rookies.
Yeah.
Whether you're, you know, creating content or you're not, and you're just playing the game, like, you're prospecting these rookies. I mean, that's why you play Dynasty,
yes.
Because you want to be a GM,
yeah.
Right? So going up and getting your guy
is a thing.
Is part of,
yeah,
that.
It's a thing.
Is a thing. Yeah. It's part of that experience.
Yes.
And we do it too, right? Yeah. We trade back, but we'll also want to trade up for our guys, like just like we done recently.
Yes.
So absolutely, I think it is find those edges, being able to basically replace your pick or push the pick out a year and then still get something on top that is another ticket to hit, right? Another draft pick to whether draft a player or even move that one back, right?
Yeah.
So then you're now, you know, multiplying the value off of that one move.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. Like, especially I like doing this. Like, if you're in the early third, let's just say, right? I love doing this, by the way. This is one of my favorite ones as well. Early third. I've got the 303, 302, whatever. And I'm about to pick, but I look and I say, I'll sell this pick for any second next year. What happens is there's going to be someone who thinks that guy just fell to the 302. He's a second round talent, but I'm going to get him at the 302. I'll gladly spend my next year's second to get this player right now at 302, 303, sometimes even later in the third. But I'll just announce this pick available for a 25 second. And you know what will happen generally? Someone will offer that motherfucker up.
Yeah, you get an offer and you just smash it instantly,
smash it,
right?
Instantly.
And then you get off. Yeah, and then you avoid, you know, that landmine or that tough decision, right? You just punt it.
Just punt it. Right? And then next year, now I have an extra second, and that becomes a 204. And instead of fucking getting this jerk off at 302, I got, you know, some awesome player at 2.04, right? I mean, the worst it can be is similar to next year. Well, but I also have, you know, that free upside. And it's actually not a bad trade both ways, because the guy is kind of right. He is getting maybe a talent that fell. But who the fuck knows anyway? But that's one of those where I'm always looking to do that as well. So I guess there's never a point where the value becomes, you know, not in your range. Like, you know, because here's the other thing too. Most of the time I'll do that chalk when I feel like the rosters are too shallow or I have too many good players. If I'm kind of loaded, I want to do that. What's crazy about that is that helps the dynasty keep going, because I'm already loaded and I'm already stacking picks for next year. And it's just like, oh my God, you guys are doomed. I don't even have to make a tough cut decision because I'm just going to punt all my picks into second rounders next year. This is amazing. So yeah, those are the moves I love making. I was in a rebuild. I got to tell you about this one. You're going to love this one. I'm in a rebuild. My team is, I got the 101. I think I got Troy Franklin, and this is the one where I got the Brooks at the 114 and whatever. I've just been picking guys. I've got a lot of picks. Okay, great. So I'm making all these picks. I got Caleb, yada, yada. This team's no good. You know, it's not a good team. I can't win with it. 16 team league. I don't know. I get this idea that I should maybe think about, because it's a 16 team league. I offer my 213 and 214, so late second round picks, and a future second, 26 second for Mike Evans. And it's like, why would you buy Mike Evans? You know? I'm like, I don't really even know why I'm doing this. I just don't like the players on the board here. Excuse me. I didn't, not the two. I send my 3-3 and my 3-4. Sorry, I fucked it up. My 3-3 and my 3-4. So it's like, I'm in the third round of a 16 team league. This is like pick 40 or whatever. I'm like, I'm not going to really like what's there anyway. So, you know, I'm just going to give him up and offer a future second, see if I can get a real player. Maybe with Caleb and a few things, I have future first. Maybe I could turn this into a win now team. You know, if I can do it cheap enough, that was my strategy. I was like, if I can do it cheap enough, I get a guy like Mike Evans. I get another player on the I didn't spend anything, 2/3 and a fucking 26 second. Like, that's nothing. That's none of my capital. I have 3 firsts next year, 3 firsts and 26. Like, I'm loaded for future to rebuild this thing. But who knows? Maybe I could make something happen. You know, I've got Puka. I've got a couple players, you know. So I'm like, all right, I make the deal. The guy says yes. I'm like, boom, I got Mike Evans. Chalk, the chat fucking starts blowing up. What the fuck? That, you know, so like 4 or 5 people say, that's like the cheapest I've seen Mike Evans go for in my blah, 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 you know, which I'm like, that's kind of true. I didn't expect to get the guy either, but I got the guy. So, of course, what do? I hit put Mike Evans on the block right after all those comments. They're like, the cheapest I've ever seen Mike Evans go for. Mike Evans hits the block minutes after this trade. And, of course, everybody's fucking laughing emoji hit it. You know, I'm like, this is funny as hell. But it's true. I did steal him, and he is available. Those are all true. So I turn around and sell him moments later for like the 213 and the 214 and 2 future seconds or some shit. Like, I literally used Mike Evans as a gold chip to improve like the shit I was drafting already. And I didn't cheat, lie, cheat, or steal. It was just, you know, it's just playing the values. So, you know, just because you're a rebuilding team doesn't mean you can't necessarily buy value when it's there. And Mike Evans posed that value. The league agreed. They're like, what the fuck? That's not the right value. And then I recorrected the value within moments, you know, maybe an hour, not even. I mean, very quickly, he was off my roster. I moved up a bunch in the draft, and there's the story. What do you think?
That's incredible, man. I don't know if I could ever top something like that, man. That's the red paperclip, you know, in fantasy edition right there.
Yeah, I mean,
it's amazing.
But the lesson, I guess, is like, don't be blocked off to different transactions, right? And I know you're not either. You could have pulled off that. It's not like I was like, I didn't mastermind this shit. It's just like, I just thought, you know, maybe, you know, this is a good time where picks are feverish. You know, there's people want to make these picks, you know, if you're in a 16 team league and you had one pick, maybe two pick, you're like, God, I could use some more guys. Really? People could use guys in a 16 team league. I'm like, I'll offer him these two picks plus a future. Like, you know, how much more are you going to get for Mike Evans? If you've been holding him, you haven't been getting a lot of offers for Mike Evans. There it is. There's my sell window. Boom. A guy accepts, you know, so you just never know where you're going to find that value. So was it risky? I think a little bit. But, you know, I think that's the idea, is that you're always balancing risk, because you never know. I mean, you never know.
And that's why you're like accumulating picks too, right? So it's like you can go and buy a Mike Evans if you wanted, or, you know, move the pick when it's on the clock and someone else wants it. And then, right, you take Mike Evans, and then, you know, he's still a productive player, right? So you're buying productive players, and you can always flip them later, right? And recoup or gain value within minutes or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, I think what it is, like, to your point is, right, like accumulating that value, always being ready, and playing within kind of those tiers and kind of striking as, you know, people are going to be interested, right? Like looking to push value out into the future, or looking to kind of swap, you know, this type of value for, you know, a production type value versus, like, you know.
And I love making trades when the rookie draft is happening, also because everybody's active. You know, there's so many times during even the season where not everybody's paying attention. You know, not everybody's active, man. They're just not active. Even startup, man. You know, if you're on the end and it's like you just picked your two picks or something, you're like, all right, man, I'll fucking see you in a week. This is 8 hour clock, man. Holler at me when it's my turn. Like, I might put the phone down for 2 days and not even fucking worry about it, you know? Whereas the rookie draft, it's a bit different, man. Everybody's really itchy on that one. And, you know, because every opportunity could be an opportunity to trade up, especially if you say so. So I think communicating in the league chat or whatever you guys use to communicate that, hey, man, you know, I would consider moving this pick. You know, it doesn't have to be I'm selling this pick. I would consider moving out of this one if anybody's interested. It makes it seem a little bit more like, well, I've got a number of different ways I could approach this guy. I think the language sometimes you use matters, and staying, you know, diligent. You know, I'm a busy motherfucker. I don't always have, you know, we're on the phone doing this startup together, and it's like, we're both busy. And it's like, you got time to make some trade offers? No, you know, all right, fuck it. We'll talk to you later. And like 2-3 hours later, it's like, hey man, you got time? It's like, yeah, I'll do it. All right, I'll handle it. It's like, it really is. It's hard to do it all and to do it right. But, you know, as much as you can, you have to, you know, stay with it. So anyway, that's the story. I think that's enough. We'll tell the people what's up. So what a show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. You know, great time always, you know, always fun hanging out, talking ball and talking some strategy. You know, looking forward to, just seeing what the team is going to do this coming season. You know, a lot more fun stuff coming, you know, the listeners and the fans way.
Yeah.
And of course, the Undrafted, man, just continues to take off. So
that's a good point. I should remind everybody, this is something I plan to say because I think it's worth it. By the UN score model, because, you know, Chalk and I have decided to give all the whatever we get for money to the guys who created it, which is going to be Coder, Wiz, Trav, and Dukes. You know, that's where the money's going, because they work their ass off. Really putting a lot of effort into it. So, you know, for whatever that's worth, you know, I mean, you're actually contributing to content creators who are working real hard, and really, really putting their heart and soul into the work they do. I can tell you that much. Those four dudes, you know, there's others who supported them and us, and we worked hard too, but they really did an amazing job. I mean, you and I are both overwhelmed, and I would be remiss not to say a big thank you to everybody, every single buddy on this team, but those four guys in this particular case specifically, big, for real, sincere thank you.
Yeah, man. Couldn't have said it better myself. You know, so much work put in by them. And then, you know, so much work put in by the team, doing everything else, right? For the Undroppables, the Uncovered guys, you know, Mike, you know, Grindberg and Abe and, you know, just Trav killing it, of course. And, you know, just everybody on the team, really putting in, you know, all the work they can. And you know, so much love to them.
Yeah. They don't get enough enough recognition sometimes. I mean, we don't do this necessarily for recognition, but it's kind of nice to get it, and they deserve it. So with that being said, I just want to say a big thank you to y'all. So thank you so much. And thank you to the listeners. Thank you to everybody who supports us. We feel the love and support from the listeners, from people on Twitter, from people in the Discord, all over the place, man. And that's really cool. If you do buy the model and you've got some criticism, fucking throw it at us. It's fine. It's not a negative. It's an authentic piece of work that we really put in genuine thought and effort into. And it's an honest piece of work, but it also is not perfect. If you think you create something like that, that's perfect, you've got a problem. We know it's imperfect, and that's what's cool about it. So if you have some feedback, fire it at us, man. We're an open book, and we'll share with you guys what was driving us and what we like, don't like, and all the rest of it. So if you have questions, it's great content. You can ask Wiz, you can ask Coder. Coder will tell you, man, he's a fucking G, man. FF Coder, check him out on Twitter. He's a great follow and a great person to interact with. So by all means, he's basically the guy who created the damn thing. Go follow him. He deserves a follow and would always interact in a very, very cordial way. He's just awesome dude. So all that being said, on behalf of everybody here at the Undroppables, on behalf of everybody here at the Undrafted, on behalf of Wiz, Coder, Trav, and Dukes, you have been joined by the Chalk. I am Jax Falcone, and we are out.